flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind Original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This next order relates to the definition of birthright citizenship under the 14th Amendment of the United States.
That's a good one. Birthright. That's a big one.
What about that one in the court? That one is likely.
Could be. They think we have good ground, but you could be right. I mean, you'll find out. It's ridiculous. We're the only country in the world that does this with birthright, as you know. And it's just absolutely ridiculous. But, you know, we'll see. We think we have very good ground.
We, the people of the United States,
more perfect.
The pure form of our perfect union.
Heritage legal expert Hans von Spakovsky.
Hans is here, as he is every Thursday. Hans, thanks for being here.
Well, I appreciate you having me back.
So let's lay the groundwork and not just assume that everybody knows what birthright citizenship is. If you wouldn't mind just explaining birthright citizenship before we get into this discussion.
Birthright citizenship is a legal concept that almost no one in the world recognizes that says that if you are born in a particular country, you are a citizen of that country, no matter who your parents are. Doesn't matter if they're illegally in that country. Doesn't matter if they're a foreign diplomat in that country. If you're born in that country, you're a citizen of that country.
And I'm asking a little bit of the history here, so if you don't know, it's okay. But why is that just something that is in America and is nowhere else?
But it's not in America. And that's the mistake that all the critics are making and why Donald Trump is correct. Citizenship is defined by the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which was one of the Reconstruction Amendments passed after the Civil War. And what all the critics the reason the critics are wrong is that if you look at that, it's a very simple sentence. What it says is that you're a citizen of the United States if you are born in the U.S. and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. Now, everybody concentrates on just the first part, born in the United States. They ignore the second part, subject to the jurisdiction thereof. I've actually done a lot of research on this and gone back and looked at what the sponsors of the 14th Amendment in Congress said. And what they meant by that phrase was that you owed your political allegiance to the U.S. and not any other country. And the easy way to understand that is that, look, if a German tourist comes to the U.S. and she has a baby here, that baby is a citizen of Germany, not the U.S., because even though they were born here, they owe their political allegiance to the German government, not the U.S. government. And that was recognized for 100 years after the ratification of the 14th Amendment. It was only late in the Roosevelt administration that they suddenly started saying, oh, well, we're going to ignore that second part, and we'll just issue passports to anybody who was born in the U.S. And what the president is trying to do is reverse that policy and go back to the way the 14th Amendment was originally interpreted and applied.
Hey, Hans, this is Brad. My question with that answer, that what raised the question to me is whenever we're looking at legal theories and understanding what the Constitution says, how important is it to go back and look at what the original authors of said amendment intending by it?
Well, that's very important, and particularly in this case, where you're trying to understand what does that language mean, subject to the jurisdiction thereof. And I'll tell you the other thing that the mistake people are making. The critics say, subject to the jurisdiction of, if you're in the U.S., you're subject to our jurisdiction. No, that's territorial jurisdiction. What that means is if that German tourist comes to the U.S. and mugs me, that German tourist can be criminally prosecuted because they're part of our territorial jurisdiction. But they're not subject to the political jurisdiction of the U.S. That German tourist can't be pulled into jury duty. The German tourist can't be drafted into the military if the draft were brought back. That's the difference that we're talking about here. And look, there's only been three cases in the entire history of the U.S. before the Supreme Court that even peripherally touched on this. Let me tell you about one of the most important ones, because that illustrates this.
Yeah.
In 1884, a U.S. Indian sued the federal government saying, hey, I should be considered a citizen of the United States. The Supreme Court, because I was born in the United States. Supreme Court said, no, you are not a citizen of the United States because you owe your political allegiance to your tribal government, not the United States. OK, that explains it. And in fact, you know, the only reason Indians are considered citizens of the U.S. is because in 1924, Congress passed the Indian Citizenship Act. If we had birthright citizenship, there would have been no need for Congress to ever pass that law. And what's been happening for decades now is just a policy misinterpretation of the 14th Amendment.
So, Hans, you said that 1884, that's a Supreme Court case you're referencing, right?
Right, right. What the critics like to point to one other case. There was one subsequent case in which the Supreme Court said that the son of permanent lawful resident aliens would be considered a citizen. But that's because at the time, remember, we had the Chinese Exclusion Acts, those very racist laws that said that no Chinese person could ever become a U.S. citizen. Look, that was a misinterpretation of the 14th Amendment. But even the best case that the critics have only said that the children of permanent legal resident aliens would be considered a citizen. That doesn't apply to illegal aliens. And we've never, ever considered that the sons and daughters of diplomats, foreign diplomats, are U.S. citizens either.
So, Hans, when Trump signs an executive order like this, my assumption is that it's been very, very well crafted with all of this in mind. Their intent is for it to pass legal muster. Is it that they're trying to get this to the Supreme Court? Is that the whole goal?
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly what is going on here. And look, as you know, a bunch of states have said they're suing. It's all blue states. They're suing. Well, I don't know what they're suing about. This order doesn't affect the states. This only affects the federal government. This affects, for example, the State Department. The State Department now, when somebody applies for a U.S. passport, they're going to have to show that not only were they born in the U.S., but at the time they were born, one or both of their parents were U.S. citizens. It doesn't affect what the state of Illinois does. And the Illinois governor was one of the people that was criticizing the president and saying, wrongly, it's always been the law of the land that we have birthright citizenship. I mean, that's just factually a total lie.
Hans von Spakovsky with a senior legal fellow, Heritage Foundation, giving us all of the lowdown, especially on this one, because there's going to continue to be a lot of discussion about this birthright citizenship law or executive order, whatever we're calling it. Is it possible, though, that if it's intended that this EO is supposed to work its way to the Supreme Court, that courts will throw it out on standing because they say, well, the states don't have anything to do with it.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This...
Well, they could make that claim, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think I think they'll let it go forward. And the reason is, look, by the time he left office, Joe Biden had beaten Donald Trump, I think, by one judge. In other words, Donald Trump in his 4 years appointed more judges to the federal courts than any prior judge in U.S. history. Biden beat him by one, and that was because Democrats really wanted that. The problem is that every single one of the judges nominated by Joe Biden, they are the most left-wing, far-left radicals ever to sit on the bench of the U.S. court system. So what's going to happen is all these states, the ACLU, other suing, they're going to venue shop. They're going to file a lawsuit before the most liberal Biden judge they can find, because they know that judge is going to ignore the law, ignore all the history of the amendment that I just told you about, and rule against Trump just based on ideology. So that'll guarantee they'll get the court. They'll probably get a stay against what Trump's done, but it'll work its way up and the Supreme Court will take the case.
So last question on this topic, Hans, how long is this expected to take? And in the meantime, what happens to the executive order?
Well, that'll depend on what the courts say about it. Right now, that order is in place. I have no doubt, like I said, some liberal, out-of-control federal judge will issue a stay against it. Given the even if the lower courts, the trial courts, the courts of appeal, even if they work quickly on this, I don't think this will get to the Supreme Court at the earliest before the fall of next year.
So, yeah, okay, so that's about what I expected. I was going to ask you about some other things, Hans, but before I do, you brought up another issue that is very interesting, and that's about the number of judges that each president was able to put through during their terms. It sounds like they were almost equal, Trump's term and Biden's term.
Right. Yep, that's true.
Have you heard anything in Washington, D.C. about this being another top priority of putting through judges now that you have a Republican Senate and a Republican president?
I haven't heard that because they've been dealing with so many other issues. But I have no doubt that will be a very important priority because it was for the first Trump administration. They understood, the folks in the Trump White House, how important it was to actually get good judges into those positions. I mean, look, that's one of the reasons we finally have a fairly good U.S. Supreme Court, because of the three slots that Trump was able to fill on that court. So I have no doubt that they will put a big emphasis on this. But look, they've been so busy with all these other, frankly, wonderful executive orders they've issued that that'll come next, filling up judge slots.
Well, I'm tapping my foot here. I mean, it's been 4 days and I haven't heard anything about it. So, hey, Hans, while we're speaking, Fox News reporting right now, kid you not, that a judge has blocked the birthright citizenship executive order.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised. I'm sure they venue shopped and found some liberal judge.
you want to know where it is?
Who will rule on their side.
U.S. District Court in Seattle, Washington. Surprise,
yeah,
surprise.
No kidding. Yeah, what a surprise.
Hey, before we run out of time with you, I did want to ask you about some of these pardons. You know, this is a big group of people to pardon, although, you know, by my count, Trump pardoned, you know, 1,500 January 6ers and still didn't eclipse the number of people Joe Biden pardoned in the last few days of his administration either. So it's a lot of pardons. But how does that process work? Because I saw a lot of people online saying, you know, some of these prisons were not, you know, not just, they were kind of just holding on to the prisoner and saying, well, there's a process for this. Like, how does that work?
You know, that it's an interesting question. Normally what happens with the pardon process is there's actually an office at the Department of Justice, and people who want to get a pardon or want to get clemency normally apply for it. The Justice Department reviews the case and then makes a recommendation to the president. That obviously didn't happen, certainly with the Biden administration, which, you know, Joe Biden pardoned thousands of prisoners, and there's no way that the Justice Department actually reviewed any of those cases. With Donald Trump, look, he ran saying he was going to do this. So this is no surprise to anybody. And the difference, you know, the difference between the two, the most that anybody did of the J6ers was really criminal trespassing. You know, not a single police officer was killed. In fact, it was only unarmed demonstrators who were killed. Compare that to Joe Biden, who pardoned murderers, rapists, thieves, drug dealers. I mean, the difference is stark between the two presidents.
You know, Hans, I said that was the last question I have for you, but I lied. I got one more. Hopefully you got time for one more, because
yep, I do.
The other question that I wanted to hit on that I almost forgot about was starting day one, so starting Monday of Trump's term, what has changed concerning the border? You know, you can't build a wall that fast. So what exactly has changed in the week or few days that Donald Trump has been president versus when Joe Biden was at the border?
Well, I'll tell you, the biggest change is that he issued an executive order declaring a national emergency at the border and closing it. What that means is that the Biden administration, whenever an illegal alien came across the border, the Biden administration would allow them in, process them, which means establish a record for them, and release them, where they would then disappear into the interior of the country. Donald Trump has actually shut down the border. So every single illegal alien trying to get across the border, if they make it across and they're caught, they're being turned around and sent back. So the flow into the country has basically, wherever they're caught, has gone down to zero as compared to the tens of thousands who were coming in almost every day out of the Biden administration. That is a sea change in what's going on at the border.
So Trump was able to do that, and it sounds like what that means is when Biden said, no, I can't do that, you have to pass a bill first, that he was lying.
He was lying.
What?
I mean, that was an absolute lie by Joe Biden. The president had the power to close the border. Joe Biden did under of an applicable federal law any time during his presidency. He just did not want to do it.
Wow. Well, Hans, thank you so much for jumping around from issue to issue. There's been a lot of executive orders signed, so I figured we'd have to jump around, but I really appreciate your expertise on these things, as always, every Thursday here on the Annie Fry Show.
All right. Take care.
Love Hans. If you ever meet Hans, too, he is just the nicest guy in the world.
Yeah.
You know, there are people, I've been in radio for a long time and met artists. You know, I worked in music radio, and most of them are great. But every now and then you meet somebody, you're like, oh, that person is completely different than the way they sound on the radio. Hans is not. Hans is like the nicest guy in the world, and just really appreciate when he comes into town. You know, we do events and things like that that we invite you guys to. If that happens again, we will, of course, invite you to a Heritage event if we have that on the horizon. Right now, we have to do a hard break into a segment that I usually love, but I really don't know what this is going to be like because I don't lead Wiggins America.
I know what it's going to be
when I'm hosting. So I know that Ethan's doing it.
Ethan's going to do it, and it's going to be younger, smarter, and better.
I don't love that. I kind of like the way it usually is. So let's see if he can try to just duplicate the brilliance of Wiggins America, I think is what the goal is. Stick around, and I think he's talking about New Year's resolutions. We're going to talk a little bit about crypto, too. So keep it here. Be right back.